well churches. I do that in schools as well as in even just gatherings where people could be there for their social events. I have had an opportunity to be invited to a number of women events just for me to be able to talk to them. I mean, today it was an event with regard to the celebration of Human Rights Day. And of course, not only were there women, but there were men. And of course, there were children. So we were able to teach more on human rights once more, even in that environment. We also go to school. So most importantly for us is just education. Education is key insofar as human rights are concerned. Because we realize that in most instances, it would seem that people are not really aware what is it that they need to protect and what is it that they should not, they should be, what is it that they should not be doing. You know, for one, the issue with regard to xenophobia, especially in the location where I practice, I realized that it would seem that people were not clued enough that, you know, even when you're a foreigner, you do have rights. Now, the fact that you are in South Africa and you don't really, you are not born here, does not change anything. So we had to every time teach about that, and people were seeing the light and they realized that, you know, it's not the fault of whoever that has come across the border. Really, it was more about maybe service delivery. Or it could have been about the fact that government was failing them insofar as houses, and not just government, maybe government officials, because then you would find a situation where houses are being occupied by foreigners instead of South Africans, and that also would then cause the turmoil in the area. And those were the issues that we had to find ourselves in mediation between the parties to try and make sure that peace does prevail at all times. So as a commissioner, I believe that more must still be done. Yes, I have seen that work has already been done, but I believe that we can do more than that. By being able to go to even the most remote areas, you know, where we see that service delivery is really not happening. And
thank you very much. We have limited time. Do you have any criminal records?
Do I have any?
Criminal records?
No, I don't have any criminal records.
Were you at any point declared insolvent?
No.
Thank you very much. Do you know the salary or the remuneration of a commissioner or deputy chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission?
No. No, I did not really have a look at that.
The salary for a deputy chairperson is 1.2 million, and the salary for a full-time commissioner is 1.118 million.
Right.
So now that you know, are you comfortable with that salary that you can leave your practice and go full-time earning that salary?
Yes, if I do... If I do get appointed, you're of opinion that I have made a good impression and I'm a candidate that you are likely to work with, I would happily take that position, because for me, it's not really about the money, it's about making the difference in that organization. Having looked at the work that has been done, I just feel that I could be party to it and I would be able to leave a legacy that a lot of people can really resonate with.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, questions? I have the following members: Honorable Mufuke, Honorable Mola, Honorable Swart, Honorable Lusane. Let's start with Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Good afternoon, madam.
Good afternoon.
Hi. I have two questions for you. The first one is, what in your view is the reason for the commission being required by the Constitution to be both independent and impartial? And why is the independence so protected by the Constitution? That one first, please.
I did not really hear the first part. I just heard where you said independence and partial.
Why is the Human Rights Commission required by the Constitution to be independent and impartial? Why is the independence important?
Yes. Yeah, it is very much important because of the type of work that the Commission does. The Commission is there to ensure that, for instance, government is held to account, and even the judiciary and even the other arm of state. So it is imperative that they are independent and they are partial in order to ensure that the Constitution is upheld and all the policies, because of course it goes as far as even the private sector. So human rights protection and promotion will require the Commission to be independent and partial.
Thank you very much. And then my last question, what, if you're appointed, what is the legacy you would like to leave?
Well, the legacy that I would like to leave is just, you know, to make that mark and go to those untapped areas. Because I believe that there's still a lot of work to be done. I've already said that I've acknowledged that work has been done, but I still think that there's a lot of other work that can be done. I have looked at the fact that the Commission says there's a number of complaints that they come across, but I believe that the legacy should be that the work will be ultimately done. Those complaints will be attended to. But take it further. The matters must have, you know, they must ultimately see their life, whether in court or whatever the situation, but there must be a resolution with regard to the matters that will be handled at the time when I will be as a commissioner.
Thank you so much, madam. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Ms. Quinan, maybe I did not hear you properly. Did you say that the judiciary also must account to the South African Human Rights Commission?
Not really account, but remember the judiciary, they must be able to apply the law properly. So it is such that the commission must be able to look at their work and be able to advise properly. Obviously, our communities, the public at large, they must be able to understand why things are happening in the manner that they are happening. But of course, we all understand that with the judiciary, one has a number of, or it's the court's hierarchy is there to protect the public at large. Because if you're not satisfied with the lower court, you can go up and up and up until you get it right. But what is imperative is that the commission must have networks with our judiciary. So, but not that they'll be holding them to account.
Thank you very much.
They are accountable to the Constitution. And the commission is there to ensure that they account to the Constitution.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mfuke.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon, Ms. Quinane. My first question, I'll only have two questions for you. One will be noting that March is celebrated as Human Rights Month. What can be done by the South African Human Rights Commission to combat sex schedules such as racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerances, as well as gender-based violence and femicide, which are undermining South Africa's human rights culture?
In the organization where I am already, ours is more about teaching, as I said. And I, according to me, education is key. So that's where we need to start. It will never be enough, particularly when we still see that gender-based violence, racism, and, you know, all those that we have mentioned, they are still being perpetuated. So for that simple reason, it means we need to do more on education. So I would say during this month, let us have more workshops, let us have more seminars. The commission must engage with different organizations that are already out there so that they are able to tap in into those markets that might not have yet been tapped. That is maybe a committee that seems to have, you know, been forgotten. So they must be able to go out there. So the commission must be able to get its hands dirty. It must go right to the ground and assist our people. Thank you.
What suggestions do you have to improve public understanding of the role of your Chapter 9 institutions? Did you get that? Did you get the question, Ms. Kunani?
The network was a bit bad. I
can repeat that.
I didn't get that. I just had Chapter 9.
Okay, let me
repeat. Will you please repeat?
What suggestions do you have to improve public understanding of the role of our Chapter 9 institutions?
I didn't really hear the question. My network was very bad at the time. Are you able to hear me?
I can hear you.
Yes.
I must find out if you got the question, or should I repeat the question? Can I repeat the question?
Please repeat the question.
What suggestions do you have to improve public understanding on the role of Chapter 9 institutions? So I think her network is not okay.
Ms. Kunana?
Yeah. Yes, I couldn't hear. It was buffering. So.
Ms. Kunana, can you find an appropriate... Ms. Kunana? Ms. Kunana?
Yes.
Ms. Kunana, can you find an appropriate spot so that we can have this interview?
Move around, yes. Okay.
So in the meantime, we will check with whether the next available candidate is there already, and then we can come back to you. Please find an appropriate spot.
Okay, even though it sounds much better,
it is
better now. Now that's you. Okay. Okay. Let me try and move around until I get a better spot.
Committee Secretary, do you have the next candidate?
The last one,
yes.
I'm just asking to load.
Hello?
It's in the waiting room. Should I admit you?
Yes, please. Thank you very much. Can the candidate introduce himself?
Afternoon. My name is Moss Nkla.
Afternoon, and how are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you very much. I know that we were waiting for at least half past, so we called you earlier. Sorry for that. Sir, can you tell us about yourself, your experience, your values, and why should we appoint you to be a commissioner or a deputy chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission?
Thank you, Chair. My story starts many years ago. I had a very strong commitment to human rights for quite a while, and it started when I was finishing high school and I wanted to do engineering. I had very good grades. I had a scholarship with Anglo-American. The year was 1977, and I couldn't, I wasn't admitted at Wits because at that time, Chair, there were black people were not allowed, and so I knew all along, obviously, that there was something wrong about the way human rights were violated systemically in our country. But that became a very personal issue. And then I went off to do to study at the University of the North because, you know, you had to do that. There were so-called Bush universities that you went to. So I went there, did a science degree, which was nowhere near what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a chemical engineer and therefore could never be because of the color of my skin. And therefore that started me on a journey of looking to see how I could be part of a struggle that ends this kind of discrimination on the basis of any category, whether it's a race or class or whatever it is. And so that have been a feature of my life for all of these years. And so even to this point, I continue to work in areas where this is a dominant theme. I, as I indicated, when I was a teenager, I was excluded from Wits because of the color of my skin. And I work in the church now, and I see way too many young people who are excluded, not because they're black now, but because they are poor. They're too broke to be allowed entry at the universities of their choice. And so that remains an issue. And not only that, I've also seen a lot of instances where the people's human rights continue to be violated in communities. I work with poor informal settlements, and I have seen how it is that this sort of things that are taken for granted in many environments where access to justice, access to human rights can be taken for granted, they simply are not, this is not the case. And so, and that continues to bother me. And so that's the reason I thought being part of the commission, which incidentally I've relied on in the past, where there have been challenges in the communities I serve where the rights were violated, and I invited commissioners to come alongside communities, and I've seen firsthand the difference it makes when a commission engages communities, and I've seen service delivery improve. I've seen ambulances respond timely when called upon. Even the police began to act on the call of communities like that. And so I've been thankful for the work of the Human Rights Commission because of that. And so I felt if there's a possibility to participate and strengthen the culture of human rights in our country, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you very much. Do you have any criminal record?
No, I do not have, Chair. Thankfully, no, I don't.
Okay. Were you ever declared insolvent at any time in your life?
No.
Thank you very much. Do you perhaps know the salary of the South African Human Rights Commissioners, full-time commissioners, or the deputy chairperson? We can't hear you properly. Can you deal with your volume?
No, I don't. I'm not aware of the numbers, Chair.
Okay, the deputy chair earns 1.2 and the full-time commissioner earns 1.118 million per annum. Are you comfortable with that?
I would be comfortable, Chair, yes.
Thank you very much. Now I have the following members who would want to ask questions. Honorable Mola.
Yes, thanks, Chair. My first question, Chair, is on social cohesion. Does the Human Rights Commission have a role in promoting social cohesion in the country or amongst the people of South Africa?
I take it it's a question directed to me, Chair, is it?
Yes.
Yes, I think there is an extent to which social cohesion is an important part of it, where, as I've indicated in my own personal story, the effect of exclusion has meant that I would obviously not feel part of this society. I would feel aggrieved. I would feel that people who benefit because they are white are part of the injustice that is perpetrated, and therefore to the degree that our country has white and black people living together, there is bound to be a tension that is a result of that kind of inequality of treatment. And so that was in the past. But currently, obviously, we still live in a situation of very gross inequalities, probably one of the highest Gini coefficients in the world. And so that still says to us as a society, we have legitimate grounds on the basis of which people will feel robbed by others, will feel unjustly treated, will feel they are getting the short end of the stick. And so to the extent that the Human Rights Commission can help address some of those issues, whether it is through attention given to the socioeconomic rights in the Constitution, or some of the issues that have arisen, I think, in the public space now with racial inequalities. You know, the recent story of the SABC, or the ENCA rather, where there was unequal treatment between what was seen as black and white journalists. So that says that we still, because of our past, still continue to cause injury to each other. And so the human rights would have a role to ensure that justice is done in occasions of that sort.
Thank you very much. The second question is on a white critic that has been leveled throughout time against the South African Human Rights Commission. The critique basically is that it has got less visibility in the country, it has got less accessibility in the country, it is unable to maximize its own effort in ensuring that promotion and protection of human rights in the country is advanced. Do you think that this critique against the commission is fair and justifiable?
Yes, there is that sense. I agree that it is justifiable to an extent, I suppose, because in the instances where I've seen human rights abuses happen, the people involved or who are victims of such have not known what to do about it. They haven't known about the Human Rights Commission. They have not lodged a complaint, and therefore, yes, there is still a lot of work to do in terms of taking the Human Rights Commission to communities. Having said that, I would also say that they're probably in a country with the sort of economic growth that we have and the resources available. I don't know to what extent we can fully meet the budget that would make such public awareness completely accessible to everyone. I think that we have to continue to work on that, and I think that there's more that can be done to promote popular awareness of that.
Thank you very much. What in your view should the commission do in fostering coordination and cooperation with other Chapter 9 institutions and the civil society in general? And is this coordination and cooperation so important? If the answer is on the affirmative, how is it important that there must be this coordination and cooperation?
Yes, I think there ought to be for two reasons. I think that the one is that there obviously wouldn't be enough capacity within a single institution to do justice to the mandate of the Human Rights Commission. So it makes sense that there ought to be as much coordination as possible with other organs of state, Justice Department, even social development, and so on. So there ought to be that. And so I don't know to what extent it is currently being accomplished, but I think that more could be done. I think the issues around human rights are of such a nature that unless we do something to transform the lived conditions of people, and that speaks to the economics of the majority of South African people, it'll be very difficult to achieve the sort of rights that we need. And so I think now also of something like Ministry of Enterprise Development, I think there ought to be greater coordination to ensure that the poor are lifted out of poverty as a way beyond rights that people can actually begin to earn livelihood that dignify them beyond simply their constitution.
Honorable Mola, you have less than a minute left to ask your question and get a response.
Okay, sir. Just one. Section 36 of the Constitution is a limitation clause. The limitation must be done in accordance with the law of general application to an extent when the limitation is there. To an extent that the limitation must be justifiable and reasonable. What is your understanding of a justifiable and reasonable limitation of a human right?
I'll use a practical example. The previous years, I think the Commission on Culture, Religion and Language was set up. I I served in that commission, and there was a particular instance where a rights clashed. There was a particular incident where in some village in Limpopo, a particular church, it happened to be the ZCC church, made a ruling in that community, and the chief in that community made the chief made a ruling that there ought to be a circumcision school for all young boys between months, let's say June and July, and but during that time there should be no other festivities, no weddings, no public singing, whatever it is, that would show a disregard for that ceremony. And that is a cultural tradition that has been historic for years in that community. Well, the ZCC defied the chief's ruling and said, we can't not worship in the way that we do, and the way we do it, we dance in the street. So they then proceeded to dance in the street. And the people who went to circumcision school beat the worshippers up. So there was a big violent conflict between the...
Okay, can you round up?
Yeah, so you had a clash of faith and culture. And that said to me that there is a way in which these two rights in the Constitution, the cultural rights and the religious rights of these communities, should be counterbalanced in a way that ensures coexistence and peace. Because at the end of the day, the chief, the aggrieved party would have to live in the village where the chief still was the chief. So thankfully, as a CRL, we were able to mediate between those two rights, and everybody was able to live with that.
Thank you very much. We must always be mindful of time. Honorable Jelle.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon from Moss. My question, I have only three questions for you. The first one would be, what do you think are some of Africa's achievements in advance?
I missed the last part of the question. What are some of whose achievement?
What do you think are some of Africa's achievements in advancing human rights?
Thank you. I think there have been plenty. I think there's been liberation and justice accorded to people who were previously colonized throughout the continent, and so those colonial projects are no longer in place. In South Africa, apartheid used to be the dominant theme and doctrine of governance. It no longer is so. So we have moved hugely in the journey towards making sure that everyone approaches equality and justice. Still a long way to go, but we have achieved that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And the second one would be, you did touch earlier on that one, on the issues of awareness, but I would want also to take another angle in asking this question of access, that what would be your innovative means that you would adopt when you are appointed in making sure that promoting public awareness and access to human rights?
Thank you. I think that the obviously the issue is to actually accomplish a cultural transformation, in other words, where human rights is to not only be a personal right of a few who happen to know, but it becomes something that is culture-wide, so it becomes almost a normative idea. And so that requires that we go about setting up monitoring tools that can tell us whether we're moving forward or we're standing still in terms of this transformation of culture from what it is now to one where there is a normativeness about human rights. And I think that a behavior change of that sort requires much more than information. It requires more experiential engagement with communities so that they can become a part of the change they seek to see. And I think that involving communities in that journey of change is an important part of it. So that it's not simply a top-down information about here's a constitution, here's a bill of rights, and know it, but they have to see it practical in their lives. And so that brings me then to the need for coordination. It can't be human rights alone, human rights commission alone, coordinating with different organs of state that realize, even if it is in a gradual sense, so aspirational sense, some collaboration that makes tangible change happen for communities. That would be my approach, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think I have the last one. Earlier you have outlined the situation where we are coming from and also touched on some of the progress aspects in our society that we have acquired in changing the situation. But you would realize that we are really indeed living in a very charged political environment currently.
Mr. Romano, we are disturbing our meeting. Bonani? I will phone him when I remember. Can you proceed?
Thank you very much, Chair. Apologies from us. I think you don't mind me calling you because in the time you like that and we feel very
No worries. Don't mind.
Thank you. Apologies for that. My question was going to be, how would you handle complaints that may be potentially politically sensitive or otherwise controversial in the light of your understanding of the role of the Human Rights Commission?
Yeah, my understanding of the commission in the Human Rights Commission is to be independent and to exercise their task without fear, without prejudice, in all honesty as they are capable to do in respect of conscience. And so I think that that approach is one that sets the scene for being able to rule without anxiety into whose toes you are stepping on. And I think that is the gift that the Human Rights Commission can give the country. I think everybody would like to have some impartial arbiter of the very many conflicts that we meet. And so I think the human rights, thankfully, has a track record of attempting to do that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. That was my last question. Honorable Mofokeng, are you around? Can you assist?
I am around, but the chairperson, I'm sure I can see he's muted, but I can see if I'm right.
Sorry, sir. Thank you very much. I was still trying to sort out secretariat disrupting our meetings. Thank you very much, Honorable Janji.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Nta, can you just share with the panel what section of the Constitution deals with appointment of commissioners?
What section of the Act?
The Constitution of the Republic.
It's in Section 9.
Section 9.
Yeah, I think the Human Rights Commission is a Section 9 institution. It talks to the need to promote and protect human rights and to work for their realization and their attainment, and to monitor our society whether we are actually.
Let's pause there. I'm going to be generous with you and explain what section it is. You might want, after this interview, to go and have a look at it. It's Section 193 of the Constitution. Section 1, subsection 1 says, the public protector, members of the commissions should be women or men who are South Africans, who are fit and proper, and so it goes. That's the section I'm referring to. And having been generous to you, can you assist me with this question? Why in that section do you think it refers to women and men? Why does it emphasize women or men and not a person?
Yeah, I think we are a society that is largely patriarchal, and therefore if it is not stated, then we go on the default mode of being patriarchal and only assuming that person means men. So I think it is correct that it has to say that there ought to be gender inclusivity in that.
And what is your understanding of a fit and proper commissioner?
It means that this commissioner should be competent to carry out the tasks that are part of the mandate of the Act, and that there shouldn't be any legal or financial kind of scandal that would prevent them from serving in that capacity. Because it is an office that ought to communicate trust to our society, that people who occupy that role have no skeleton of any sort in their cupboards.
Is Mr. Ntla a fit and proper applicant?
I take it so, Chair. I take it so.
Why?
Because I do not have any evidence to the contrary in terms of all of the, whether it is legal or whether the justice, from the point of view of justice department, where I have a case standing that would indict me of any or other malfeasance. And as I have indicated earlier on, there hasn't been any. Somebody asked, I think, earlier whether I had any, I had been declared bankrupt or so, and I answered that I wasn't. So okay. I think all of that put together talks to that.
Thank you. And pause there. So did you, in preparation for this interview, or just in your interest, because your prayer here today is that you want to be a commissioner of the South African Human Rights Commission. Did you study and do research about their work and their reports? And if you did, is there any one thing that you can share with us that jumps out in your mind as a sore thumb, which is a problem that the Human Rights Commission is failing on?
I think where we are at, again, is the issue of being able to connect the theoretical, almost, you know, understanding of rights with the socio-economic rights that I think the Constitution does say that the Human Rights Commission should require of different organs of state some way in which they can show confidence that they are moving in the direction of the achievement of that. Well, recently, and this appears in one of the reports of the commission, that the community of Amaskral, for example, have not had, were at one stage without water. And all of that does say that there ought to be, I guess the Department of Water Affairs ought to, there's a lot of explaining with regard to that. It is not so much a, if you like, a weakness of the commission so as the weakness of the department. Okay. And why it isn't.
Thank you. Let's pause there. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janja. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. And good afternoon, Mr. Ntlao. And may I also disclose that I do know Mr. Ntlao over a number of years. May I just ask, given your experience that you had on the CRL Commission, there are obviously a number of challenges facing Chapter 9 institutions in general, and in particular the Human Rights Commission, as you've applied for that, is facing certain budgetary challenges. How would you address those challenges and ensure, as you've very lucidly pointed out, the efficiency of the Commission in reaching out to communities, given budgetary constraints that the Commission is faced, with your experience on the CRL Commission as well?
Yeah, it's quite a difficult question, that one, in that it obviously the question of resources to meet the mandate of the Human Rights Commission is one that's going to stay with us for quite a while. I think that the standard response obviously would be that you approach Treasury and build the case for a strong budget. But I think beyond that, the commissions ought to be, I don't know if this is currently the status of the Human Rights Commission, but I think there ought to be a way in which they think they should be able to have ways to raise funding over and above their budget allocation that they get, if it can be demonstrated that doesn't compromise their integrity in coming to just outcomes and just decisions of their work. But there is a lot of work for the Commission, the Human Rights Commission, to do. And I think the financial constraints are going to be there for a long time to come.
Thank you. And given your experience on the CRL Commission, there was also the CADA-ASMA report on Chapter 9 institutions, which spoke about maybe collapsing the different Chapter 9 institutions under the Human Rights Commission, which might enhance the efficiency and the budgetary issues. What are your views on that?
I think we will be losing a very important dimension of nation building as a society, because there is a very definite need for those commissions to, say, the Gender Commission or the CRL Commission, that if they were to be collapsed in a human rights commission, we would lose the distinctiveness of the different rainbow nation that we have, the different societies that exist. And so we would be failing our nation-building project. We can't sacrifice at the altar of finances the very real importance of enabling cultures that were in the past marginalized and given no voice at the precise moment that we're trying to construct a new society. I think those communities would need to speak in their own voice and enable us to arrive, even if it's over time, to an equilibrium where justice is increasingly accessible to every part of our community.
Thank you. Yes. And we've seen the good work that Reverend Chris Nissen has done on the commission from faith-based organizational perspective, engaging the commission and faith-based organizations to extend human rights. Would you see a similar role, given your faith-based background in the church, should you be appointed as a commissioner? What role can faith-based organizations play in promoting human rights and alleviating poverty in the nation?
Thanks for that. I've always believed that the most certain and sure foundation to ground human rights is to ground it ultimately in the idea that we are human because God said so, right? God created us as humans, and that our humanity has dignity because we are created in the image of God. And so that is as lofty an ideal of human rights that you can imagine. And that, for me, faith gives the reason for a tireless commitment to making sure that every single one of us as a society fulfills their God-given potential without discrimination, without any marginalization of any sort. So I salute what Reverend Chris Nissen has accomplished in the commission, and I've known him for years also, from when he was when I was at university. And so he comes out of that tradition where his activism for human rights is funded by his faith, and that's been the case with a lot of the history of this country, where people of faith have really contributed to the struggle for freedom, for truth, for justice. And so we expect to continue in that tradition.
Thank you, Chair. Just the last question, just about the engagement of the Human Rights Commission with the executive and the challenges. Is my time expired, Chair?
You are left with 1 minute to ask your question and to get your answer.
Okay, just the engagement of the commission with the executive and the challenges in that regard.
Yeah, I think that that precisely is the reason that engagement ought to be more vigorous and much more transparent and public, so that the executive is held accountable by the human rights. I think that the can very well be a tendency for the executive to muzzle the voice of the commission, and I think that would be an error. I think our society needs a very independent commission that is able to make everybody feel represented.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much, Mr. Plough. And wish you well.
Thank you very much. Honorable Swart, Honorable Kretenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, sir. Please bear in mind when answering my question, sir, that I'm a great admirer of brevity. Can you tell me why it is you think that the Constitution demands that the Commission be impartial and independent?
Because that's the only way to ensure justice for all. If people are biased and come at the Constitution with that, it's going to, you know, imperil everyone's options and opportunities.
Thank you, sir. And then finally, if you are appointed, what legacy would you like to leave?
I'd like to be able to say that I've made a contribution to us obtaining a culture where there is no longer a need for a human rights commission. I think we exist as the commission exists because there is still a good cause for that. It would be good at some point to arrive at a society where that is no longer the case. So any small contribution I can make in helping the CAF move in that direction, I'd be delighted.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chen.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bredenbach. Honorable Msana.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings, Mr. Nka.
Greetings, Mr. Mbe.
Yeah. Okay, like you've heard, our time is very limited. If when you respond, you can just be straight to the point. As you may have correctly analyzed, the exclusion or the minimum representation of our youth in institutions such as this one, as well as the huge generational gap that exists, how do you plan on bringing knowledge and interest of the South African youth into spaces like the Human Rights Commission? And what innovation would you wish to introduce in the human rights space if you were appointed as commissioner?
I think the best way to do that is to address what's one of the key issues that face youth in our country, and that's socioeconomic rights. I think although the Human Rights Commission can do very little with that, but to require government departments to actually show what it is that they are doing to alleviate the plight of young people, many of whom are unemployed, are not at school, are not in training, and are basically hopeless. And so to the extent that the Human Rights Commission can be the fire behind the state organs to achieve that, I'd be happy.
If you are appointed, and from what we've heard, what you went through as a youth, you would have to lead other people. And how would you describe your leadership style? And also, if you can provide us with an example of where you have successfully led a program that you would say benefited South Africans.
Yeah, to your first question, what is the my leadership style? I consider myself as a team worker. I work very well with team. I believe that every member of the team brings talents and contributions that ought to be harnessed. And so with the other commissioners in the commission, but also staff, I believe that our role would be to draw out the best contribution of all of these persons. With regards to the second one around the specific example, part of what I work with now is a program a few years ago, I think a few years ago now. We started a program that looks at how best to combat racism in our society and how best to build an interracial society. And we give ourselves a 10-year plan to say you can't destroy racism in a year, nor can you destroy it in 10 years. But in 10 years, you can start a journey with communities and individuals and leaders that makes it possible for, in 10 years' time, to actually begin to build habits that can hold and that can then, have a multiplier effect in that sense. So it is a working project in process, in progress there. It is not obviously 10 years. It's not going to be done now, but it is part of a journey that we're on. That's one thing that comes to mind immediately.
Okay. Do you think enough is being done with regards to the human rights of refugees in South Africa?
No, short answer is no. I don't think there is enough, and that's the other thing. More could be done. I think the Home Affairs, for example, is dealing with some of that, and other government departments are doing that. And I can understand on the other level the frustration of South Africans who feel that refugees are taking up some of the privileges that are theirs. There are very tricky questions to face there. And I think attention ought to be given to both the conditions under which people live once they're here and given refugee status, but also the porous ways in which our borders are. That is a problem.
Which supporting skills do you think are most important when it comes to effective leadership of an organization such as the South African Human Rights Commission?
I think we need people skills. You need to have empathy with people. You need to have a sense of being forward-looking with regard to understanding that there are some issues that can be solved immediately, even though communities and people may want immediate redress. To have the patience to know that what is required is not instant result, but often process. Transformation takes process. So transformational skills, people skills, and being able to be strategic about how you approach these challenges.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nkla, and thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Msane. Honorable Newgot Traha.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings, good afternoon, Mr. Nkla. My apologies if my question seems to be repetitive. I had some network challenges today. I would like to know, in your view, what are the critical human rights challenges currently in South Africa?
Well, I think that the race issue continues to loom large, as well as the gender one. These are issues that shape our society, shape inequality, shape who lives and who dies in many instances. And so that, I think, race and gender and one can say class, all of these are issues that end up with huge mortalities and huge impact on the part of those who are previously disadvantaged and so.
Thank you. The COVID pandemic required a limitation on human rights in the interest of the greater good. And it's put a spotlight on the role of the state and human rights during this pandemic. What, in your view, are the key human rights issues that emerged since the start? That's the one. And then secondly, do you think the Human Rights Commission responded adequately to the to these challenges?
I think the key, some of the things that came up as a result of COVID is that obviously the poor had an unfair disadvantage with regard to the fact that they didn't have any of the things that were stipulated as protocols and part of the disaster management. And therefore, they ended up being the ones that are most at risk. And similarly, where there were issues around access to institutions, whether the hospitals and so, you have to almost travel to those institutions. So if you are poor, unemployed, and so, you end up just dying at home. And many of those deaths, I think that would often go unreported as COVID. And so that is a problem. I wouldn't put it at the door of the Human Rights Commission, but there are obviously human rights issues that can be raised about access to treatment and access to healthcare in an environment of COVID. And I think all of the departments, health, and even all of us institutions, state institutions, should be able to inform the nation about what measures have been taken in order to alleviate an unequal treatment of our society in the face of a pandemic.
Thank you. What are the lessons learned during this time that can benefit us in future, in your view?
Lessons with regard to the COVID context?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we would do well to not waste the very difficult moments such as we've had in terms of hygiene, in terms of being more self-aware, in terms of being not traveling unnecessarily. I think many people who would have had to work from home have discovered that it is not possible, not necessarily to be on the road as much. And also, it's been highlighted how much dying happens on our roads as a result of liquor. I think as a society, we have some difficult choices to make about liquor and its consumption, even though people might claim it's the human rights. But if we are dying to the degree, I heard a stat the other day that says 550,000 people died because of alcohol-related accidents and incidents. I think all of these things are saying to us as a society, what do we do with that data? Do we ignore it and think it didn't happen, or do we use it to better frame public policies that save us from self-destruction?
Thank you. What are the focus areas that you would like to deal with if you should be appointed as a commissioner?
I'd like to deal with the public education aspects, where there is attempts made to actually go out in the communities, partner with whether it's civil society agencies across departments of state, in order to contribute to the transformation of the human rights environment in our society. And so the public education mandate and the promotion, obviously, of making sure people's human rights are respected, it's a very sore point in our society, and I'd like to make a contribution in that regard.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Newport Drachen. Honorable Mufuke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Nkha. March is celebrated, in fact, as a Human Rights Month. What can be done by the South African Human Rights Commission to combat scourges such as racism, racial discrimination, as well as gender-based violence, xenophobia, and when you look at gender-based violence, you must pack things that are under my radar. What do you think is supposed to be happening?
Yeah, I think that is I indicated earlier on with regards to the fact that we need to move beyond it being individually understood to being owned by the culture. I think our culture as a society that is not does not take human rights as a normative value. There is still a large degree to which people, the abuses that you represent, the gender-based violence, the racism, and so it is not. People do not automatically, by default, comply or observe the values of the Constitution. We have to move to a place where it is a cultural norm in our society that those values have changed. And so, and I said that public information on its own will not do. I think that there ought to be more engagement with communities and societies and having participatory programs where communities do not see human rights as something that comes from above by the state, but doesn't resonate with their own culture, their own understanding of gender, their own understanding of the situation that they face. And I think that there are, just to use an example, when there have been service delivery protests in the townships where people destroy clinics and destroy facilities they would need, even schools, all in order to make the point that they had in one or other area. I think that says that the culture that is dominant is still one pretty much that where there is no language to discuss problems except service, you know, where you have protests, where you burn places up. Only then do you get heard. I think we should build a society where people's voices, not only as individuals, but as communities, are respected enough for them to see difference. And that, again, I think the state has a lot to answer for. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of cases of corruption, and with billions have disappeared that ought to go to service delivery. All of those are part of a holistic approach that need to be taken in order for us to move to a place where culturally, as a society, we honor everyone's human rights.
What is the role of the tariff process, and what is the role of the National Assembly in supporting the South African Human Rights Commission?
It's the first part.
The first part is, what is your understanding of the role that the South African Human Rights Commission should play in supporting the parliamentary process? That is the first part. The second part is, what is the role of the National Assembly in supporting the South African Human Rights Commission?
Okay, let's start with the last one. I think the parliament, the assembly, can strengthen the voice of the commission, being that I think everybody agrees we want to transform this culture that we're in. I think the voice of the National Assembly is an important one. It doesn't help where, for example, members of the National Assembly themselves are implicated in gender-based abuses or in acts that are corrupt, where resources that ought to go to alleviating poverty find their way into personal interests by whatever means that is achieved, as we've seen in the Zondo Commission. And so I think that the first contribution the National Assembly can do is to actually come clean to the degree that A, they personally are culpable, but B, to the degree that they are seen as supporting what the Human Rights Commission is trying to do, where it pursues not only the reports of the different departments and state organs in the way that they address socioeconomic rights, but also in helping us get the resources necessary for the commission to fulfill its mandate. The first question. I covered adequately the first question.
Are you saying that you didn't hear the first question?
I did hear it. I was just asking whether what I've said has covered it adequately.
It did. Thank you. What suggestions do you have to improve public understanding of the role of the Chapter 9 institutions?
I don't know if it's been tried before, but I think that the education system can play an important part with regard to that. I'm not aware of this happening in the schools, but it would be very important for that education to start in the schools, so that people grow up with an awareness of all of those promises of the Constitution. I think communities as well would need a way of celebrating what we have. I think a lot of people do not celebrate enough. What I found is in our society is that only those who are literate or who are familiar with Constitution speak know, for example, how to start a Section 27 NGO that would pursue the rights and the promises of Constitution, because they, you know, those NGOs are aware of those rights. But for the large part, there are communities that ought to know aren't aware. And so I think more should be done in terms of bringing that information to communities and helping them to be part of the ownership of the promises of the Constitution.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nentra, and thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mufuke. And thank you very much to Mr. Nhla for availing yourself to be considered as a commissioner or possibly as deputy chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission. Thank you very much for availing yourself. If I may ask you, did you find the questions to be fair or the process to be fair?
Yes, Chair, I did find them to be fair. I trust that I've treated them fairly as well.
Did you find the whole process to be fair? The
process was a good one also. I found it to be fair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nkla. We have asked you to provide us with fingerprints. We are still awaiting for the screening report. Once we have received the reports of all the candidates, then we'll start with our deliberations, which will result in us advising the National Assembly. The National Assembly will make a recommendation to the president as to who needs to be appointed. Hopefully you would know once that decision has been made.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much, and have a good day of what is remaining of the day, or afternoon, or evening. Thank you very much, Mr. Nkla. Can we go back to Ms. Kwinana? I hope she has now found the right spot for us to be able to continue the interview uninterrupted. Ms. Kwinana, we can only see your head. Thank you very much. Is your bandwidth okay now?
I changed networks.
Oh, thank you very much. You were still being interviewed by Honorable Mfokeng, who was asking her second question. Can you start from the second question, Honorable Mfokeng?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Mekwinane. My question was, what suggestions do you have to improve the public understanding of the role of our Chapter 9 institution?
Okay. Yeah. As I've already said, for me, what is key is to educate the public. And we need to be more practical where there is consent, so that they can understand exactly what is the importance of our Chapter 9 institution. And safe to just say that I was just thinking about the education part thereof, that you know, it should not be done only for people that are of age. In fact, if we could, we should try and go to even the primary education, start very young, because I believe that children's minds are like sponges, and they're able to absorb a lot of information, and that can be valuable to them. If we can, if it's really possible for me, I would say that's where we need to start. That's where we need to look at, because truth be told, we are teaching the elders, but it would seem it's not enough, and of course, as the saying goes, it's very difficult to teach old dogs new tricks. So one should consider that aspect. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And my last question to you would be, what is your understanding of the role that the South African Human Rights Commission should play in supporting the parliamentary process? One. Number two, what is the role of the National Assembly in supporting the Human Rights Commission?
With regard to Parliament, of course, this is where our laws are being made by the legislature. So for me, the role of a Human Rights Commission, it is to ensure, it is to ensure that you promote and protect the human rights, that are already enshrined in the Bill of Rights, and of course to make sure that the Constitution is observed at all times. So, with regard to the support or the commission, really, it is just for them to be able to ensure that those policies, when they're being made, we have thought of all the other situations. So the commission, because it is on the ground, it is privy to what is happening, it is able to then assist in shaping the laws and the policies that ultimately will be made. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Ms. Gwinane.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mfokeng. Honorable Nebo Trachans.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And good afternoon, Ms. Gwinane.
Good afternoon.
In your view, what are the critical human rights challenges that are facing South Africa today?
Yeah. At the moment, I would say gender-based violence is the biggest challenge. So as our president has said, since the COVID-19 started last year, he actually said that it's like the second pandemic, it's the second pandemic. So the rights of our women are seriously being trampled upon by those that claim to love them. And if only that can be attended, for me, that is the most important one. That's the first one. And of course, I've also seen that the LGBTI communities, they're also being seriously abused. And of course, the reason being that people do not understand that everyone has got the right to their sexual orientation. And it is not upon anyone to be opposed to it or to even want to force people to behave in a certain manner. Because unfortunately, those that believe in Christianity, they would say they would never be homosexual. Therefore, we can only go heterosexual. But of course, it is not for us then to oppress those that believe in that particular orientation. And of course, I've also seen that xenophobia was rife at some point, but I would say it has gone down to a certain extent. But during the when we were under lockdown, there were attacks on trucks. And yes, again, it would seem that xenophobia was again showing its ugly head. So I'll say those are the ones that I've seen that in the country, they were just, they needed to be attended to quickly. And of course, this is where I think the commission can do a lot of work that can help our communities.
Thank you very much. Each of the commissioners have focus areas. What would you like to be your focus areas and that you would like to contribute to should you be appointed? Just two focus areas, please.
Okay. I would say I would want to focus on equality. Looking at the right to equality in, you know, vast. Of course, also the right to, the rights of women, that most important. In fact, that should have been my number one. Those would be my focus areas. I was given opportunity to be.
Great, thank you for that. During the pandemic, you know, there's been a restriction on human rights, but in the interest of the greater good. So it put a spotlight on the government and the human rights issues during the pandemic. In your opinion, what are the key human rights issues that arose during this period? Or during the pandemic?
Yeah, obviously there was a restriction of movement for our people. Of course, the right to be able to work in order to make a living, that also became a problem, especially for those that are not in essential services. You know, to an extent that even I, as a lawyer, was seriously affected because if I did not have a matter that was regarded as being urgent, I was unable to work. I had to be home. So, yeah, so those were some of the rights that I saw being unfortunately affected. But of course, as you have said, it was for the good of our community, and it was in order to stop the spread of the violence, of the virus, and that I would say it really supported the cause, because at least the right to life was preserved. We have not lost so many people. Yes, there are many 50,000 the lords, but yes, we. But the lives were at least, and of course we saw that we had the right to.
Thank you for that. Just my last question: what are the lessons that we have learned during this time that we can use in the future? And was the commission responsive enough during the pandemic lockdown?
Yeah, I would say the commission was responsive, and you know, what we learned a lot was that our rights are limited, even though, yes, we do have the right to move around, the right to associate with whoever. But we realize that those rights, they should not be such that they endanger other people's rights. And so the right to life was preserved. I mean, we saw people that were contravening the regulations, of course, being dealt with. And of course, when the military also trampled upon the rights of others, we saw that also being dealt with. And that was key, because then it taught us all a lot that even though you might be in authority, whether as a police officer or as a military officer, you must still observe the rights of our citizens.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable New Vote Drahan. Honourable Msane.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to Umamukwina. What innovations would you wish to introduce in the human rights space if you were appointed commissioner?
Yeah, because I belong to the South African Women Lawyers Association, I was just thinking about it. Women are the most marginalized, and they don't really get the work that really what that is able to give them enough for what they do. And I thought maybe I could say, because they do a lot of access to justice projects, and the commission could partner with organizations such as SAULA and, of course, many others, but with the hope to actually being able to, not only will we be able to ensure that our people get access to justice, but, of course, these women can maybe earn a salary whilst they do this work. So, of course, not on a large scale, but being there, because already they're on the ground, they're doing the work. So at least a stipend of some sort. Just, so I was just thinking maybe a project along those lines can really help them. Thank you.
Being aware of the challenges faced by the South African Human Rights Commission, as we have highlighted in the previous answer, if you are appointed, you will need to lead others. How would you describe your leadership style? And can you provide us with an example where you have successfully led and you can say that your leadership really did benefit the people of South Africa?
Yeah, I would say that my leadership skills are very inclusive. I'm one who would always make sure that they engage their people that they are with. I'm able to listen. I'm a very good listener, and I'm very open-minded. So I would say that in that regard, I would be able to engage meaningfully, and I would definitely be able to be a good leader. I have seen myself being able to work with people for a lot of years. I mean, I can tell you that I've been with my secretary for now 18 years. So if that does not count for something, then I don't know. But I would say that means I'm able to relate. I've got good interrelation skills, and of course, even in my other areas of engagement, because I serve in other areas, I work with those people very well. And ours is about the work that you must do. And of course, I don't forget that you remain a human being, and you might be having your own challenges. So the motherly instinct that I have, or the woman instinct that I have, also assists me a lot. And of course, it saves you also just mention that being a staunch Christian, that also helps a lot, because I understand that mine is not to judge, but it is always to make sure that I understand what troubles are there that could be facing the person. Why is the person being unable to do their work? That I also make sure that I engage in. But of course, I set parameters and I set ways in which people are able to even check themselves as to the work that they're doing. Just to, you know, one would be able to say at the end of the week, they'll say, I realize that I have not done my work. And they'll be able to say, no, next week I'll do much better. Thank you.
Which supporting skills do you think are most important when it comes to effective leadership of an organization such as the South African Human Rights Commission?
Yeah. So I would say that social welfare, in a way, reason being that when you work with human rights, you are bound to engage in situations that are very uncomfortable. I mean, already when one thinks about racism, and you can imagine having to observe an area that being done and how it will affect you. So going home as the person that will have dealt with that situation, you can imagine that you will be heavily burdened with what you have seen, and now you need to be able to still continue with your life. So for me, counseling will play a major role in this regard. So the mental, you know, the mental status of people that are dealing with this type of abuses that are being committed should be in a situation where they'll be able to go somewhere and talk to someone and get help in that regard. So constant counseling, being able to talk to somebody, being able to share your experiences, that can really help a lot.
Okay.
Of course, with a professional.
Do you think enough is being done with regards to the human rights of refugees in our country, in South Africa?
I would say that in that regard, something is being done, but I would not say it's enough, especially because we have a situation where some people become displaced and to an extent that they wouldn't really know what to do with themselves. It is so that in our country, refugees are able to go into the communities. They're even able to get work. But I believe that it can be, more can be done, especially because when you look at them being able to access the asylum permits, it's always very difficult. Most of them don't have the money, and the document itself, for them to just go and get the document, they have to queue in very long queues. I mean, I think of Maraba Stad, luckily for me, because I am in the area, and you find them standing those long queues. The situations they are appalling. And of course, it has encouraged corruption within the Department of Home Affairs, because you'll hear that some people are even buying with certificate, you know, and the situation where the permit has expired, they want to renew it, but they have to go and stand at some queue, and the lines get cut off, and so many things that are happening there. So I would say we need more, offices.
Can you round up?
Yes, we need more offices to be open that can assist our foreigners in order for them to access the certificate. And of course, improve the conditions where they stand, because we see women and children standing there, there are no toilets. It's really bad. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mama Kina. And thank you very much, Charles.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Sane, Honorable Janji.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick one. Ms. Kwinana, what section of the Constitution deals with the appointment of commissioners?
184.
Are you guessing?
I think it is 184.
Are you taking a guess?
I read it.
Okay, that's a very good guesswork. Let me be generous. It's section 193 of the Constitution. And I'll just be more generous and share with you subsection 1 of that. Which says the public protector and members of any of the commissions who are women and men who are South African citizens, fit and proper. That's a requirement put, that's just subsection 1. And I want to ask you on that subsection, why do you think the Constitution emphasized women and men and not say persons?
I would say it's because women have been sidelined for some time, and most of these positions, they would not even be looked at. So they have been overlooked over the years. And so the reason why our Constitution, I would say, is saying particularly women and men is to ensure that that does not happen again, ever. Thank you.
Thank you. And I went further to say we need a fit and proper commissioner. What do you understand by a fit and proper commissioner of human rights?
Fit and proper for me, obviously, to uphold the constitution, what is required. And I'm just reminded that, of course, the powers of the commissioner will come from Section 84. So one is required to promote and protect the rights, the human rights as they are enshrined in the constitution. So for you to be said to be fit and proper, you need to also know what is it that is expected of you, and most importantly, to be able to implement that which that which is required of you. Thank you.
Is Nomathubi Qhinana a fit and proper applicant?
Yes, Nomathubi Qhinana is a fit and proper applicant for the simple reason that Nomathubi Qhinana has been practicing as an attorney, making sure that in our court, wherever she appears for people, she ensures that the law is upheld and no wrong people is convicted and sent to jail, and just procedures that are ought to be done in court are done. And of course, I have never even overlooked the situation where I might not even be the attorney that is representing a person in a court and injustice happens, I will still speak against it. So I am known for being able to stand up for any abuse of human rights. So I would say definitely I'm fit and proper.
Thank you. My last point, Chair, and it's taken out of what she said at the very beginning, and it struck me. Struck me in the manner you put it, and I want you to assist me. You described yourself at the very beginning before you broke up. You described yourself as a victim of human rights abuses. This is what Nomathubi Qhinana said earlier on, that he's a victim of human rights abuses. It struck me because the question I want to ask you, Nomathubi Qhinana, have you overcome victimhood?
Yes. No, I have. In fact, you know what? Even though I say I am a victim, but I have never lived as a victim. That is why I fight, whether it's for my rights or it is for rights of others. I stand up against any oppression. I never succumb. It doesn't matter where I am, whether it is in the profession or it is just socially, I stand up against a human rights violation.
The reason I'm asking that question, because if you are successful and you become a commissioner of the South African Human Rights Commission, you are going to be expected to be a champion of victims of human rights abuses, but you're also going to be expected to understand and relate to those that are abuses other people's rights. That's the reason I was asking this question, so that we don't put somebody in this as a commission who goes in there very soon because she still behaves as a victim.
Yeah, no, definitely. I am a champion. For me, that being a victim, I was born in 1971. I was unable to vote until a very late stage in my life. So when I talk victim, amongst others, I'm talking about that. You know, the fact that there was a time when in South Africa, I was a nobody. because I did not have the right to vote. But I assure you that if I am appointed, I am definitely the person to go to, the person to speak on behalf of anyone. And I can relate. I know what it means, you know, to having been born without rights. I understand that. Most important, after that, then as a woman, I was able to understand that even as a woman, it does not really look like you've got rights. At the moment, rights for women are written, but whether they ultimately are able to enjoy them, it's another thing.
Let's pause there. I can see your passion. I can see your passion. Let's pause there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tante. Honorable Taylor.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Honorable Janji must not touch women. You know, women, we have our own ways of... No, on a lighter note. Molo, Mam Kwinana.
Molo, Mam Te.
Njani, Sandra.
It's Kona Njani.
Yeah, no, I mean, I only have three questions that I would want you to give me responses. The first one is that, what do you think are some of Africa's achievements in advancing human rights?
So what do I think South Africa has done to achieve human rights?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I would say, you know, with South Africa, we are so fortunate. We are known for having the most inclusive constitution, well written, you know. I once read somewhere that, you know, our constitution has been sourced from many other countries, and that is why it's such a beautiful constitution. So I would say our achievement is in that document itself. The document is beautifully written. It's almost perfect, I would say.
Thank you very much. If you are appointed, Mam Kwinan, what innovative means would you adopt to promote public awareness and access to human rights? Are you still with me?
No, yes. I can hear you.
Okay.
No, I can hear you. I can hear you. I think. No, I heard you. I heard you, Machele. I would say, for me to be able to achieve the innovative part, it's about having a more inclusive approach insofar as the education of our community. So we must be able to engage more people on the ground and get them more to our side. And for me, if we do that, we should be able to disseminate the information properly. But like I said earlier, even more than that, we need to go further down. So we should not just look at others, but we should try and go to our children. Our children have got beautiful minds that are able to absorb a lot of information. So if we plant it there, as it said in Sizulu, you know, we need to start with them when they're still very young. And so that we know that we have invested in a very good system if we start with the younger ones. Thank you, Mam Chief.
Thank you, sis. The last one now. This one, Mam Kwinana, you know very well that we are functioning in a very political charged environment. And now you're going to work with the Human Rights Commission. So, but now I just want to hear from your side, how would you handle
complaints that may be politically, potentially politically sensitive or otherwise controversial in that environment that you understand the role of the Human Rights Commission.
So, as a commissioner, mine it is to protect and promote the Bill of Rights. Whether it is the politicians that are involved, whether it is the Christians that are involved, the law must prevail. So I do not think that it will be a problem. Most importantly, all those that will be involved must understand that I'll be working under the Chapter 9 institution, and which requires me to ensure that the law is upheld. So that is why I think that every time what will be key is for people to be made to understand why the commission exists, so that when they get to the problem, it does not become a problem for them why they are involved. They must be there because they must see to it that justice is done ultimately. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mam Kwinana. Good luck. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Last question.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jelle. Honorable Mola.
Thank you very much, Chair. My other device is dead, so I had to change the device. Miss Kwinana, afternoon. Unfortunately, won't spend some of the minutes busy with greetings. So let's go to the business. My first question is on the role that is supposed to be played by the commission in promoting social cohesion. What should be the role of the commission in fostering or promoting social cohesion?
I would say that amongst others, mediation becomes very, very important in order for the commission to be able to achieve social cohesion. And of course, engagement, constant engagement, that is also very much important.
Okay. The commission has been criticized widely and across society. And part of the basis at which the commission is criticized is that it has not maximized its own effort in the promotion and the protection of human rights. Secondly, it is not visible, neither it is accessible to the people of South Africa. So do you think this comment is fair and justifiable?
I would say that I was concerned that the offices are not as many as I would have liked for them to be. I have realized that, yes, there are offices in each and every province, but I know that there are areas that are in the most remote, very much remote areas that might not be getting access to the Human Rights Commission. So I would say, for me, we need to increase our visibility as the commission. We need to even increase the people that will be accessible to the communities at large. That will be sort of the goal between the commission and the community. So that that way, it is in a way ensuring that there's definitely network, there's dissemination of information, and people are aware what their rights are, and they're able to ensure that they enforce their rights timelessly. So we don't get fail stories. You know, we are able to get them timely and act quickly. Because I also saw that a lot of matters that the commission is faced with. So capacity might be a problem, and for me, we need to increase that. Thank you.
Okay. There is importantly a need for a cooperation and coordination of the commission with other Chapter 9 institutions and the civil society in general.
Yes.
What should the commission do to improve this cooperation and coordination? And why is this cooperation and coordination so important?
Yeah. For the commission to be able to achieve that which it has called upon to do, it will require cooperation and, yes, those engagement. So without it becomes almost impossible. Because remember, as I said, we need the society to be able to, you know, map our network, to be able to connect everyone else to the cause of the commission. Because information flows easily if there are those networks. So without having that, it could be a problem. And of course, education comes from, you know, it with especially elders. It can be able, we will be able to ensure that elders are teaching each other, because there'll be somebody already who has the information to disseminate it and impart the knowledge until such time that we are able to achieve the cause of commission. So they are very much important.
Okay. The Supreme Law of the Country, the Constitution, Chapter 2, there are a number of human rights there listed.
Yeah.
But within that chapter, you equally have Section 36, which is popularly known as the Limitation Clause. Mm. It says rights can be limited in accordance to the law of general application.
Mm.
And to an extent that the limitation is reasonable and justifiable.
Yeah.
What is your understanding on a reasonable and justifiable limitation of a human right granted by the Constitution of the Republic?
Yes. For one, I'm thinking about the lockdown. During the lockdown, a lot of rights were limited. I mean, right to work, you know, and be able to make a living, right to education, people could not go to school.
Okay.
The limitation.
Ms. Kuna, you have covered it. That is enough. There is no need for a further elaboration. Chair Justin advised that next time you must be sure of your network, otherwise you will accuse witchcraft when you are not appointed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Honorable Nola, thank you very much, Ms. Kwinana. We know that technology sometimes can betray you at very important or crucial times in your life. We really did understand that it was one of those days. Let's hope we will not and Julie go and choose witchcraft of anything. Thank you very much, Ms. Kwinana, for really availing yourself for this important task in our country, for our country. As you know, that we have requested that you provide us with your fingerprints and all other candidates. We are still awaiting the screening report. Once that is done, then we will start with our deliberations and recommend to the National Assembly, that would also recommend to the President. as to who becomes the commissioner and the deputy chairperson of the commission. Once that is done, you would know if you are successful without witchcraft. What we would like to know from you is how did you find the process and the questions to be fair?
Yes, I found them to be fair. I think it is imperative for one to know exactly what is expected of them and to be able to articulate how they hope to then pen the commission going along. So it was very much important to be able to go to the core of it and be able to be practical. Yeah, for me, it's really key because it's not enough that you appoint somebody who knows that's how to maybe read whatever, but if you cannot implement, then I would say it could be just a waste of time. So we need more implementers in this lifetime. Because the rules are there, the laws are there, they are protecting us. We need to go to the ground and implement. So thank you so much for the opportunity. I thought the questions were fair. And yes, it wasn't witchcraft, it was just the network.
Yes. Was the process as a whole fair?
I thought it was fair. This is a very big opportunity. A big position, so it cannot be taken lightly. One must be ready to be drilled for a period as long as this. One just has to be better prepared. But I think it was fair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ms. Kwinana. We wish you the best. Have a good afternoon and good evening.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
That was the last candidate to be interviewed. Before we adjourn, the Honorable Mfokeng was raising something. And we said we will deal with it at the end of the interviewing process. Over to you, Honorable Mfokeng.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I think with due respect, I was saying that Honorable Sana did apologize for coming late, but the end of it by saying, I hope your high blood pressures are off. Insensitive for those people who are suffering.
Your network, your bandwidth, I think is low, Ms. Mfokeng.
Chairperson.
Honorable Msane.
I think I get the gist of who Mam Mfokeng, what she's saying.
Yes. Yes, Honorable Msane.
Without us having to waste time, it was meant as a joke. However, I apologize unconditionally.
And therefore,
you can proceed, Honorable Msane.
Chair, I was saying I get the gist of where she's going. The point that I made that I hope I'm high blood, I'm saying that it was meant as a joke and I want to apologize unconditionally.
Thank you very much, Honorable Msane. I hope it is taken in that spirit. I think the apology should be taken in that spirit, that it was the apology was made unreservedly, without conditions. I appeal to members to accept the apology. Is that in order, members?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, we will meet tomorrow after we will be attending the plenary on the restructuring of SSA. We hope that it will be done by 4. And then immediately after that plenary, let's say 4 o'clock, we would need to deal with domestic violence. But we would also like to appeal to you, Honorable Msana. Are you still with us?
I'm here, Chair.
Yes. Once the results of the screening are back, we would really appreciate if you can join us for the deliberations, because it is only you from the EFF who can assist us with the deliberation. Then we would communicate in time so that you can be able to arrange your diary properly. But any member of the EFF can debate it in the house. But at the level at which we are still sitting as a panel, we would always appreciate that you attend.
Understood, Chair. If they can just send me the communique.
Thank you very much. And also thank Babu Msimang for sitting the whole day with us, listening to the deliberations. We know that other parties have got the limitation of fewer members, and they are always needed in many other committees, but we do appreciate that when people like Babu Msimang find time, they always come to the committee and spend the time and assist us in various issues that we are discussing. Thank you very much, Babu Msimang. Thank you for your attendance. And thank you very much, members, for the way you have applied yourself, the rigor. And I think you have made sure that you worked very hard, you've researched the issues, and the manner in which you have carried yourself in the manner that is expected of a member of the National Assembly. Thank you very much. Babu Msimang, your hand is up.
Just a few words, Chair. Firstly, to thank you and the panel for allowing me to sit in. I learned a lot in terms of how this process was conducted, and also I learned a lot about the quality of the candidates that came in here. So it was very rewarding to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Babu Msimang. Thank you very much, members. Let's meet tomorrow at 4 o'clock. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair. You still have to join the house.
Yes. Go to the house.
The person was going to talk on our behalf. I'll ask our chief not and say, just go and relax for now.
Nice. Couldn't say my
name. No, she says that as soon as you finish, you must come in.
Okay. No, let's join in.
No problem. It was a joke. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.